There's a great Tom Hanks quote in the movie A League of Their Own. And he is trying to convince the woman not to quit. And she's like, it's just too tough. I can't do it anymore. And he's like, if it wasn't tough, it wouldn't be great. Like, that is so true about everything. Yeah, it's tough to get over your insecurities about whether you've done a bad financial move in the past so that you can move forward. It's tough to learn about a topic that either overwhelms you or maybe doesn't interest you, but you know you should know how to invest. It's tough to do these things, but it's so worth it. And nothing happens overnight. Like, nothing is overnight. So I guess I would just say to those people that you know that nothing successful happens in an instant.
Welcome to the Awaken the Awesome podcast with your host, Olivier D. This is Awaken the Awesome, a podcast bringing a down-to-earth approach to personal growth. On this show, we're helping individuals just like you learn about tapping into their incredible potential through insightful interviews and inspiring lessons. Our mission is to encourage you to always keep pushing towards achieving your dreams and to stay awesome along the way. Allegra Moet Brantley is an entrepreneur, speaker, podcaster, and founder with the kind of zeroed-in focus that never fails to inspire people like me to always aim higher when it comes to setting goals. She remains an example of incredible drive to achieve, as well as an unshakable confidence to execute on her vision. But don't be fooled. She did not start out that way. By her own admission, Allegra's time in her early 20s was spent more on climbing the corporate ladder and curating to her LinkedIn profile than managing her finances. Then, even though she was making a great salary, she was still living paycheck to paycheck and came to the realization that she had no real savings or investments. Not to throw in the towel, like so many do, and becoming disillusioned with the corporate world, she committed to putting in the work towards changing her ways and slowly but surely embarked on a painstaking and lonely overhaul of her money. She eventually grew her net worth from under $18,000 to, wait for it, $1.1 million. Not too shabby. I love it when someone takes the lessons that life and circumstances taught them along the way and not only thrives as a result, but also chooses to generously pay it forward by sharing the wealth of knowledge acquired. Which is why Allegra set her sights on a simple, focused mission: to lead 1 million women to $1 million in net worth so more women can achieve financial freedom in their lifetime. To do so, she founded Factor Wealth, an online course and community that educates and empowers women to build real wealth together. It was a true honor connecting with an individual with such a powerful message to share and a genuine mission to conquer. And I'm here for it. On this episode, Allegra shares some wisdom from one of the most important people in her life: the importance of a solid financial education, our emotional relationship with money, and so much more. So let's get into this. Awaken the Awesome, episode 210 with Allegra Moet Brantley. Here we go. I always like to start by what I call celebrating the guest. It's my own personal tradition. And what I mean by celebrating the guest, Allegra, is I always do a little bit of background on the guest and stuff, but never too much. I don't go into too much of a deep dive because I think that's like spoiling the movie or spoiling the book. But as far as you're concerned, why I'm celebrating you is because of your mission, but I'm going down to a very particular trait, which I believe is the how you care. You care with, you say you're an open book, you say you're fully transparent, not when we're not just talking about your finances and your net worth and all the wonderful work you do with these women that you've brought onto Factora and your alums. And but for me, it's how you've shared about how much you care about Big Red and all the wonderful lessons that she's taught you, and just growing up, going from fashion to finance, and how you had to go through the turmoils of, you know, just not even understanding what a rainy day fund, an emergency fund was. And you realize that instead of doing the woe is me type scenario, what we could all fall into, you actually decided, not only am I going to fix it, but I'm also going to teach every single person I know. When you became a salary negotiator and when you decided to, you know, to take, make it your mission to help people, to help people, to help people in any given way. And when you went through that fire and you went through that habit of rebuilding yourself and reading and going through podcasts and teaching yourself the tools that brought you to this wonderful journey thus far, But it's all boiled down to the essence that is caring. You care enough to do the work. You care enough to share the knowledge. You care enough to bring these 1 million women to $1 million in wealth. That is amazing. That is truly selfless. That is something that's to be commended, applauded, and celebrated. I really want to celebrate you for that, because that is generosity of character. That is time well spent. And that is something that you that is not to be sneezed at. I really mean that. We've only connected just briefly, but that is something that I recognize through listening to all your content and reading your articles and following you on LinkedIn. That's something that is truly, 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 truly awesome. And these are the type of people we want to have. These are the type of people that we want to connect with. And this is why I just want to say a heartfelt thank you for being on Waking the Awesome Podcast. It's a pleasure to have you.
Wow, Ollie, I feel like crying.
Safe space.
I don't usually start off a podcast just being so moved and touched. So I really appreciate all those words, especially the comment about my learnings from Big Red, which is my mom, and she's coming to visit next week. And I'd love for her to hear that. I should tell her.
You should. You should, because she raised, an incredible human being. And that speaks to lessons, that speaks to experiences that have, rained down on you, and you pick the best of that, and you've built a tremendous, tremendous career and tremendous mission, because that's what it is. It's the mission. We're going to get into that, but it's something that we need to talk about, because we often neglect the fact that these little nuggets of experiences can serve us so much into who we are. And if you could just pick one, can you talk about, one particular trait, one particular memory, or a particular lesson that you got from Big Red that has served you so far?
Ooh. One. The standout one is just to take up space.
Mm-hmm.
My mom is Big Red because she's taller, louder, more vibrant, boisterous. Just when I used to live in New York, I always joked her personality didn't fit on the island. And she just showed me that it was okay as a woman to come in the room and be loud and be big and take up space. And I appreciate that so much from her, because I don't think that I would have the guts to do this work if I didn't believe that I could be that voice. Because one of the things I say all the time is, I'm not a financial advisor. I'm no guru. I'm just a woman building my wealth, and I'm willing to share all the lessons I've learned, all the success I've had, most importantly, all the setbacks, because there have been plenty of those.
Mm-hmm.
And you can learn from it. You can take none of it. You can take pieces of it. The community of Factora has far more women than just my little piece of experience. But my mom's lesson of take up space, have a big voice, be boisterous is what allowed me to feel like it was okay. I could have this calling and put myself out there and do this work without having a CFP credential or an FA credential behind my name, because that almost stopped me from starting the company to begin with. And what a pity that would have been, because this is 5 years later, 2,000 women later who've gone through a long circle. And I would be, you would never know if you hadn't done it, how many lives you could touch, but I would not want to untouch them. And it goes both ways. I have learned so much from these women too. And like I said, that community aspect that women really, really flourish in, because in doing this work, I've noticed men are so much more willing to say, I have to take care of the family, so I'm going to learn this investing stuff right now. And even if I mess up, I'm going to do it. They are, in my opinion, more open to risk. Women are typically more risk averse. And so they're willing to go and try and make mistakes and do it. And women are like, I'm going to wait until I get it right, until I know I have enough education. But when you put them in a community and they see other women doing it, suddenly it's like permission, validation.
There you go.
And it's so much more accepted to be doing it themselves. So all those conversations that they may have stepped back from when their guy friends or their partners or just men in their lives were talking about money, they can lean into when it's just a group of women.
Wow. Because you know what really, I love what you said there in terms of taking your space and owning your space and, you know, being accountable to yourself and, you know, just shining by your own light is often what I guess sets us back. Because you talk a lot about the importance of mindset when it comes to money. That's one of the first steps you need to overcome. And I believe through the conversations I've had and the readings I've done, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but is it often something, is it kind of a roadblock where people fall into the trap of saying, well, I don't deserve it. Do I deserve $1 million? Do I deserve a pay raise? Do I deserve a better job? Is that something you come across a lot?
Well, interesting that you gave those specific examples. Like you said, do I deserve $1 million? I think people really resist that because they're like, maybe that's too much. Maybe that's greedy. But do I deserve a pay raise? People are so fine to get behind because that feels small, right? Like I work hard. I deserve the 10% or whatever, the next job and whatever salary change comes with that. But I find that that is the proof in your limiting yourself, right? I deserve the little thing, but why don't I deserve the big thing? And so, yes, mindset is the absolute first place to start when it comes to overhauling your financial life. Because if you don't believe that you are deserving of, capable of, or will be a good steward of money, then you're never going to be open to the full abundance that you can have in your life.
We often have the perception of, we see wealthy people, even the word wealth has that intimidating thing that's okay, it kind of separates you from the other person. But you've often said that the wealthy people, those people that you admire, aren't that really smarter than you. They just have, you know, a different set of, first of all, mindsets, but also strategies, tactics, and habits, isn't there? So I'm guessing what I took from that is, first of all, if you're in a situation where you would want to improve your financial situation, first thing, maybe, okay, your mindset, we talked about that, but how important is it to associate or find a wealthy tribe or people at least who are talking, having those types of conversations?
This is such a good follow-up question. I forget whose original quote this is, but I'm sure you've heard it. It's something like, you are an amalgamation of the five people you hang out with the most, right? And so we see this a lot with families, right? Families have very similar belief systems and thoughts and opinions of the world. And so if you can choose to hang out with people who believe that wealth is good and having money is great and investing is confident and wonderful for your family and maybe even generations of your family that you won't even know, and that that's something wonderful that you can do for them. If you hang out with people who have those beliefs, it will draw you towards believing those things too. Because it's like what we talked about before in community, there's validation there. So if you're with a group of friends who either don't talk about money or talk about it in a negative way, an example would be if you hear someone in your life say, having too much money is bad, or that person is greedy because they are too wealthy, or I don't like how this person behaves because they overspend or whatever. That is just their thoughts about money being negative and not serving them. That has nothing to do with money. Money isn't good or bad. Money is just a form of value exchange. It's the people who think about money and behave a certain way with money that can either do good or bad things. And so that's why I'm such a proponent of more women having more money, because I think women are genuinely very loving and giving and nurturing. And so if we have money, we're going to be serving our families and our communities better. So that's why I'm constantly trying to rip off this this societal belief system that money is bad and people with too much money are bad, because that keeps you from wanting to have money.
You know, you said that, and we were talking about trying to get yourself over that hurdle. I remember, just because I took so many notes, I remember you talking about when you're working for Estee Lauder and then you got the raise, and then sure, you were making good money, but as you talked about habits, spending habits, and when you found yourself in that need to do what you called a revolution. And why I'm bringing this up, because a lot of people are in this situation, right? Hey, Allegra, okay, I've got, you know, credit cards piling up, and you know, I've got this rent, massive rent, and I've got, and I'm sorry, they keep telling themselves, I can't, it's just too much, it's scary. And what I would wanted to just speak on is probably that step that I probably went through. It's called what I call maybe the shame of the Excel sheet. When you ask us to write down our spending habits, write down our spending patterns, and take accountability of the real numbers. Because my dad always taught me this, math doesn't lie, right?
Yeah.
You can interpret it anywhere you want, but the numbers are there and in your face. How do we get over that initial hump of being accountable to ourselves? Because you can't lie to yourself, can you?
No, I kind of similar to your dad. I have a quote that I say all the time: what isn't measured can't be managed. So a lot of people live,
right?
Wow. A lot of people live financial lives that are very real, right? The debits are going in and out. The credit cards exist. The bills are there. And if you don't look at all of that stuff, how can you ever be better with it? Like, you have to acknowledge and measure what you're doing so that you can be better. So yeah, one of the first things that we do in a Factora Wealth Circle is a lifestyle analysis. And essentially you're just looking at 3 to 6 months, but three is enough, of your spending habits. So if you spend on multiple credit cards, you're printing out or reviewing all those statements. If you spend on debit cards as well, or solely debit cards, you're looking at that. If you spend in cash, I hope you've been logging it. But the reason that we do this is because you have to get honest with yourself. And it is hard to face, but I will say, so many women that I've seen do this feel such relief afterwards, because they're like, oh, that wasn't so terrible. I've now done it and I can see patterns. And we match that with understanding your values, because then you can literally look at what you spent and see if it's in alignment with your values. So for instance, if your value is family, education, and experiences, and you're spending $500 a month on takeout food, but that's not a value, then you can redirect that money to something that is value. And I think that spending in alignment with your values feels so good that you can now flip worrying about the guilt of spending to the excitement of spending on things that matter to you, then remove the guilt and the frustration with spending on things that don't matter to you. But the two hard things to do before that can happen is, one, measure, right? Let's review where we are spending. And two, let's take the time to figure out what our values are. And so many people are like, what? You want me to write down a essay on like what my most incredible experiences in life have been so that I can pull out my values? And you want me to think about a time where my boundaries have been crossed so that I can like figure out the antithesis of my values so that I get really, really clear on what matters to me? That doesn't feel like financial work. And I'm like, no, but it's life work. And so life is money. We spend money every day to live. So do we want to spend money and feel good about it? Or do we want to keep ignoring it, not measuring it, and being frustrated that we're not getting somewhere?
Wow. What really impacted me with your work, and the more I got, you know, to know about what Factora does and your mission and the community built around it, and I'm really honest, because being raised traditionally Haitian, it's very much, and I'm ashamed to say, it's very much a very macho-centered society. So men hold a very powerful place into the workplace and to the finances being brought on. It's, well, of course, women have jobs and everything, but still very much manly and macho centered. It's not how I was raised because my parents had that equilibrium. My father was very transparent with us since the beginning. He made a paycheck, but he gave everything to my mom. He gave everything to my mom. My mom managed everything. So she would give him, I don't call it an allowance, but hey, you know, he knows that, okay, all the finances and resources are provided for. And okay, you take this, you handle this, and I only need this for gas, and you know, I need this for whatever. But they were happy. That's what worked for them. Why I'm bringing this up is because I enjoy this commitment you've made to empowering women to take charge of their financial life. We're not saying just dissociate yourself from your spouse or your significant other, but you have a role to play because you said it yourself in your own words. The algorithms, the market, the marketing is all aimed at women. Women spend more, women care more, women manage more, but they earn less. But still, those dollars, those spending dollars, everything, the women are the CFOs of the household. And what I love about your mission is because it helps me always speak to my daughter, because I am raising a woman, and tell her, listen, you are responsible for your own financial stability. I can give you all the best tools that I can, but you have a responsibility yourself. How do you speak to those women who have been raised traditionally, as in, you know, okay, the man takes care of everything. Well, he has a financial advisor. He takes care of the bills. He pays for the house. He takes care of the mortgage. I'm not really involved with that. That's how do you shift that mindset? Because that can't be comfortable, because you have to break those barriers, can you?
So it's interesting, because who I thought would be my customers did not end up being my customers.
Okay.
I thought that the women that I went to, for instance, this all-girls boarding school with, who have a lot of privilege, I thought that they would want to understand how to be financially savvy, how to, in your example, like not just have their husband deal with the financial advisor, but actually want to speak up in those meetings, understand things. Like I thought that they were going to be the ones who wanted to do this work. And oftentimes they're not. There's a lot of traditional relationships that I see in our society that some will probably work out fine, but we know that divorce rates are high. And so some will not work out as fine. If you have not been here, here's how I kind of describe it. And you said this, women are the household CFOs. They're making the purchasing decisions for the family, mm-hmm. but typically the men are still the CIOs. They're the chief investment officers, kind of running the P&L. Mm-hmm. Like they're seeing what can grow and what can happen. And I want all women to be able to be CIOs too. It doesn't mean you can't split it up and say, I understand this and I'm still going to let you run the investments. But if you understand it and there were to be a time where you get divorced or things go wrong, you don't have to be concerned because you've been aware along the way. So all of that to say, the women who do find Factora are the ones who know that they want to have autonomy and control and empowerment in their financial life. And there's still plenty of women who aren't interested in that. And that's okay too.
That's okay too. That's okay too. We need a different diversity of different people to run the world, because otherwise we can't. This is not 1984. But education is very important to you. And you mentioned in your own world, you know, when you had to, you know, get up that mountain of, you know, accountability and, you know, making amends for, as you call, you know, financial regrets. Okay. Just sharing. Okay. And my wife, no, just we was pretty okay. It's not a secret right now. When we were getting married, we went to a kind of a, like, you know, marriage fair type thing, a convention. Yeah. And there was a vendor. And of course, you know, we were looking at all, because we were okay financially. We didn't have kids and, you know, we were solid, you know, working professionals. And we saw it and we saw this wonderful, magnificent cookware set. I was like, huh, wow, really? Comes from Switzerland and whatever. Ended up costing us an arm and a leg. And I can tell you, within the first year, we knew there was a very bad financial decision. It was bad. Okay. It really was bad. But you learn these things. You learn these things. Sometimes they're not pleasant, but sometimes you need to knock your teeth in the wall to understand that you need to be a little bit more, you know, cautious. But what I love about it is because you need to educate yourself. So you talk a lot about reading. You talk a lot about workshops. So you also have to invest in yourself and admit that you don't know. Because a lot of us, we don't want to, you know, it's okay to admire Allegra and what she's done, but are you willing to put in the work that Allegra has done? How hard was it for you? What was the walk up the hill like?
Well, I just want to go back quickly to this perfect example of the kitchenware. I think you can read 1,000 books, listen to 1,000,000 podcasts, ingest so much knowledge from other people, but there is no, there's nothing better than personal experience. So you having that experience with your wife where you thought, okay, we made a financial decision that actually didn't work out for us. That is the best way to learn. Not reading about, like, conceptually not doing something, but actually doing it and learning from the experience how to do it better in the future. So that was my same trajectory. I did go through this financial revolution where I was consuming so much information and I was getting more knowledgeable, but I wasn't taking action because I was very afraid. And until I actually opened up my own brokerage account, picked out my index funds, played around with it for a while, saw what it's like to own a stock market investment account and what does it mean to need to rebalance or understand capital gains taxes, until I actually did that experience myself, that's the real learning. And so that's what I constantly tell women. I can go right back to that first time when I opened up a robo-advisor account. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to put in $250 and it's going to be gone tomorrow. And it wasn't. I got like a penny in the next few days. And I was like, oh my God, free money, compound interest. I don't fully get it, but I love it. I'm in. Let's get more money into this account. But there's just no alternative. That was what I was looking for before. There's no alternative to experience.
You put so much truth there, because I guess it's one thing to get all the knowledge, but it's one totally other realm to actually apply it. And I think there's the difference between, you know, because we talk a lot about mindset, and again, it's okay to have all the knowledge in the world and have all the mentors and go all the workshops, but if you don't apply it, you can't just say that the program doesn't work or Allegra's advice doesn't work, or, you know, because if you didn't apply it, because you said yourself, personal finance is personal. My formula isn't your formula. So you have to know who you are. You have to know how much you're comfortable with. I remember when I was a struggling student, you know, with like $100,000 in school debt, that was fun. When I actually went down, and I love that woman. I really did. I went down to Scotiabank and I sat down with, at the time, it was financial advisor, and came in, I opened an account and said, okay, this is my financial situation. And I got a financial health check. A person who sat down and said, okay, this is what you're making. This is how much money you make. This is how much debt you have. She really sat down and explained to me. It's like, okay, within the next 4 to 5 years, what do you want to do? Oh, you want to buy a home? Okay. You can't afford a full-on house, but you can afford a condo. So she was so nice. And I'm guessing what I'm saying is that there is going to be some legwork involved. There is going to be some time. How can we speak to the impatient people in the crowd, Allegra? People who just want that immediate satisfaction. People who think that, okay, crypto, Bitcoin, $1,000 tomorrow, millions. How can we just get a little bit more grounded?
They know. I mean, they know. We all go on Instagram because we're buffering, right? We don't want to do the thing on our calendar or the to-do list item that we told ourselves we're going to do. We're not necessarily going there to get value, although sometimes we might learn a little something while we're buying time. But does that actually bring you gratification, or does doing what you said you were going to do, opening the savings account that's been on your to-do list, or getting a brokerage account set up, or making sure you're getting your match to your 401k, or all these things that aren't instant gratification? Like, you got to do the legwork, then you got to keep doing it. You have to get better at it. You have to tweak it. Those are the things that are actually going to bring us results in the long term. And we know that because that's life, right? Like, you didn't get your dream job as your first job. You had to build up to it. And you didn't get your dream salary in the first go. So we've already proved this to ourselves 1,000,000 times. And you hear people say, like, there is no get rich quick. if someone is selling you that, it's a scheme. Run, run, run away. It takes work to get results. And there's a great Tom Hanks quote in the movie, A League of Their Own. Yeah, the baseball movie. I love that movie. And he is trying to convince the woman not to quit. And she's like, it's just too tough. I can't do it anymore. And he's like, if it wasn't tough, it wouldn't be great. Like, that is so true about everything. Yeah, it's tough to get over your insecurities about whether you've done a bad financial move in the past so that you can move forward. It's tough to learn about a topic that either overwhelms you or maybe doesn't interest you, but you know you should know how to invest. It's tough to do these things, but it's so worth it. And nothing happens overnight, right? Like, your kid wasn't born overnight. It took years of thinking, I want to have a kid, finding a partner, trying to get pregnant, your wife being pregnant for basically a year. I always joke about whenever I see kittens, I'm like, it only took you like a few weeks to be born. Like, what the heck? I walked around with a baby in me for like the better half of a year. And then you have to nurture that child for, you know, endless amount of hours and years before they go off and become hopefully a value add citizen to the world. Like, nothing is overnight. So I guess I would just say to those people that, you know, that nothing successful happens in an instant.
Wow. It really brings it home. Because we are talking about, you know, just financial transparency. And a lot of us, you know, a lot of the listeners obviously are in committed relationships. And I'm sure you've come across that as well. You talk a lot about financial infidelity, which is mm-hmm. a very serious issue. Because, mm-hmm. of course, that's what breaks most relationships, most couples. And for me, if I'm just taking my own example, since even we were dating, my wife and I, even when we were dating, we're very open. You know what? I can be the very debonair, you know, suave and romantic guy. I can take on stuff, but, you know, she totally fine. Like, you know, sometimes I'll pay for the day, I'll pay for the coffee, I'll pay for the movie. And we're still doing that. So we're very much sharing our resources because we understand this marriage, this home, these kids, they're an enterprise. So we are both at the helm and I can make a decision. You can make a decision as long as we're not jeopardizing the company. So, you know, we're totally fine. So why I wanted to ask this question, because sometimes my wife gets on me about comic books, right? That's my little guilty pleasure. And this goes back to when I was a struggling student. Every paycheck, I had my bills to pay, rent to pay, whatever. But at least I would stop by the newsstand and pick up an Archie comic. I still do that. Even I'm 42. That's my little guilty pleasure. Okay. Like, woman, leave me, at least have my comic books. So you talk about values. I guess my personal value is just a little distraction. Is it fun, whatever? But I'm guessing that, is it okay to have these little whims, you know, within the relationship without jeopardizing everything? Or do we just have to penny pinch all the time?
No. First of all, how much do your comic books cost on average?
This is $12.95. I buy them once every 2 weeks. It comes out every 2 weeks.
I would say your wife is a lucky woman. My husband likes very old, very expensive books. He is like a book collector. He doesn't even read them. He just puts them on a shelf. I mean, he reads some of them. Anyways, I would love it if that was his hobby. I think all that matters is if you guys are open and transparent with each other and you just talk through whether it bothers her or not. And then also, you know, what is she have for her financial spending that maybe feels even? Because sometimes it might just be like, well, you do that and I don't have something. But mm-hmm. then the other person might realize, oh, I do. I like to buy shoes once a month. It's just not every 2 weeks. So it's not as often or whatever mm-hmm. it might be. But yes, your point of financial infidelity is the idea of couples not being truthful or transparent or open and upfront about their spending or even their debts if they're just starting a relationship. That can cause a lot of friction. It can cause a lot of distrust. I think it's very hard to come back from. I think spending habits that aren't perfectly loved by a couple is so normal. So normal.
I'll get to live another day. Okay, so my comic books are safe. Yes, you heard it here first. But in all honesty, it's bringing it back to Factorio, and I'm guessing it wasn't, you know, like you said, you have to set big goals. I believe that, you know, if your goals don't scare you, I don't know who said that, but if your goals don't scare you, they're not big enough. Where was that idea born from? Like you took care of the people that cared, you know, your small circle, and then you started to grow and start to grow. But when, in your own words, when I hear you say that in different interviews, when you say that I understood my calling, what was that click moment? What was that fire starter? What was that firecracker moment where you realized that, no, this is bigger than me. I want to help 1 million women get 1 million in wealth. Like, can you go back to any particular defining moment where that happened?
Yeah, I've never talked about this on a podcast, but I was working for a company in New York, and I'd met my then boyfriend, but now husband, and he was living in Austin, and we were doing long distance, and I really thought he was the one. He thought so too, and we decided we wanted to figure out a way to live in the same city sooner, not later. And so I went to my boss at this personal finance company that I was so excited about and loved working at, because I'd left my fashion career. I moved to this financial company because I was figuring out my financial life. I believed in their mission. And I asked her if I could take my job to Austin. And she fired me on the spot.
Oh, wow.
And told me I wasn't a feminist because I was following a man.
Ouch.
And I was like, I don't think you really know the definition of feminist, because it means doing what you want to do. And this is what I want to do. I want to be co-living with a person that I think I'm going to marry. And I did end up marrying and having a child with. And I don't want to delay my life for a job anymore. And so that relationship didn't end very well, but it's kind of a lesson of be careful how you behave in certain relationships, because that I didn't know at the time, but later looking back, that's probably what cemented that I was going to start a company. Now, I waited out my non-compete, but I felt like I could do what she was doing in a much more authentic, better way. I don't even want to say better. It's totally different, but I wanted to give it a whirl, because there were limitations that I saw in that company. Overall, really, really great concept to help people with their personal finances, but they wanted to help people one-on-one, like kind of like financial advising, but you know, her thought was it was also focused on women, but it's very hard for women to look at their credit score alone. They might cry. We need to be there with them, you know, in a room with tissues. And I was like, I don't know. I feel like women are pretty resilient and badass, and like they can do this.
They haven't met my mom
without me standing over their shoulders. So anyways, I just later realized I want to start a company that helps women build wealth, that's different than that company. And now I've got the fire to go and do it.
Wow. It's a low hanging fruit question, Liga, but really for those listening to us, how do we take a chance on ourselves?
You make like Nike and just do it. If you have an idea that you want to pursue, I should just start by telling you, you are so lucky. Do you know how many people I know that don't have something big exploding inside of them that they need to go pursue? They're very comfortable to work at a job, and there's nothing wrong with that. For the people who get this sensation that they need to try something or do something, even if you fail at it, you're going to learn from that experience. You're going to put it back into your life in other ways. I had started a company at age 25 after I left the Estee Lauder companies. It was a luxury loungewear company. I made upscale robes for women. I fell into the bridal market because it turns out brides have a lot of money to spend and they want robes. Custom robes are in the budget when you're going all out on a wedding. And I put that company down because I couldn't afford to keep it open anymore. I went into personal debt, all of which ended up being my learnings for how to start a company from a better personal financial space in the future. But also all the lessons I learned starting that company got applied to Factora, and I was more mature and more experienced from having already started a company once before. I knew a few things more than if I had just been starting from scratch. And so I thought I would never start a company again because I was so embarrassed that that one failed. I mean, I thought I was going to be on buses in New York, like Carrie Bradshaw, you know, with my fabulous luxury robe brand. And it didn't happen. And I was the robe woman with no more robes. And it was just really, really sad. And that all played a great piece in my ultimate journey, which was to get here. And by the way, Factora isn't the ultimate destination either. I've been doing this for 5 years. I don't know what I'll be doing in 5 years from now. When I started Factora, I was just lit up about helping women build wealth. That was like a pulsing sensation at the nape of my neck. When people actually ask me to describe it, that's how I can describe it. It was just help women build wealth, help women build wealth, help women build wealth, repeated in the nape of my neck all day long. And I was like, no, 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 leave me alone, thought, leave me alone. And I remember having dinner with one of my husband and my mutual friends. And I said to him, okay, I think I'm going to leave my full-time job because I have this idea and I want to pursue it, but I'm going to go get a part-time job because that's more safe than just cutting away from my full-time corporate career and doing this 100%. And I remember him almost dropping his fork and saying, but if you know exactly what you want to do, why would you go do something else? And yes. I was like, well, because it's safer. It's just it's the right thing to do. And he was like, but so many people don't actually know what they want to do ever. So that's why I'm saying for anyone who knows that they want to do something other than what they're doing, and maybe that's just a career change. Maybe that's not even starting a company or putting yourself out there in like a manner that entrepreneurs do, but just go do it. Like there's no reason not to. You're the only person holding yourself back.
Wow. Wow. That is amazing. That is amazing because we often get stuck, I really use the word stuck, into the quicksand of our own doubt, our own insecurity, our own fear. I think it was a previous guest that dropped this on me and I kept it since. FEAR, acronym, false evidence appearing real. And I've always latched onto that because it's true. So many of the opportunities I didn't take in my life can always be down to fear. You feel inadequate, you feel you're not ready, you don't have the credentials. Well, this is for the smart people, not for me. And there you go, just leaving, again, money on the table because you will never know. You will never know. But it's been something that is very enlightening, you know, talking to you, because I realized that there's so much strength within every single individual to change their life, to grab your life by the harness and just take control. That word is very important to you. I know it, to take control, to take autonomy within your own greatness, not just your wealth, but again, mental wealth, spiritual wealth, financial wealth, because it all comes down to a whole. Because you said it yourself, money is not bad. Money is not taboo. I agree with you. I had to make that shift a long time ago. And understand, you know what? Your dreams cost money. You know, personal anecdote, last year, my family and I had to get together because my mother really wanted all of us to get together. Myself, my wife and the kids, my sister and her kids, my brother, my father-in-law, my brother-in-law. We found a way to go down to an Airbnb for New Year's in Atlanta last year. And, you know, we all came together. For me, I don't travel. I'm not the big spender in the family. You know, I've always been very conservative. But when it comes to the people I care about, I will go all out. So we went to a restaurant, my wife and I, we paid for everything. And for me, it's not even looking at the bill, but it's understanding what joy this brings when you can actually step up and, you know, just have a wonderful dinner And today, that's still something that we still talk about a year later, because life happens and we don't know when we're going to be able to do this again, you know? So understand, people, that your dreams cost money. Your financial wealth is not a bad thing. It gives you opportunities. It gives you control. It gives you access to experiences and knowledge and resources and memories that you can cherish. That's what you bring, Allegra. That's what you want to remind us, not just women, but everyone who taps into your message and mission. Definitely me. This is what we're here for. We need to build each other up. And that's important.
Absolutely. Money is amazing. And anyone who tries to tell you otherwise, send them to me. I will convince them that money is the best tool we have to build the world we want to see around us. Just like your example of being able to pay for an entire dinner for your family and be talking about it a year later because it was so joyous for you.
Yeah.
Or, you know, my family's coming in town. We're getting nice tickets to go to this lights show. And we could get the general admission, but we want to upgrade it. And it just allows you to do these things we're talking about, or much bigger things too, right? If you want to donate to certain organizations, or if you want to start companies instead of needing capital from someone else, you can have it for yourself. If you want to join different clubs and memberships, they cost money, and they should, because money, as I said before, is a form of value exchange. What you pay for, you pay attention to. Mm-hmm. That is why premium things exist with premium prices, because if they weren't premium for a premium price, we wouldn't consider them special and important, right? Mm-hmm. Like if your college education didn't have a cost, would you show up for class? Would you care about the degree, right? There has to be a exchange of money for time and attention. And so it's going to be there no matter what. Like, life costs money. So why not enjoy having money so that you can have more life?
Spectacular. We are coming up on top of the hour. I really want to respect your time. I had a fun question for you. If all the financial books had to be burned, but you only can save one, which one would it be?
Ooh. Only one, not two.
Okay, fine. Okay, two. You're the guest. I'll allow
it. Okay. I'm only doing this because I want to make it really valuable for listeners. Basically, if you really need tactical, I would read Ramit Sethi's I Will Teach You to Be Rich, because it has such granular stuff in there, like how to call my credit card companies and ask for a fee to be removed. Like, it's just very practical, helpful advice. But if you want your mind to be blown, I would read A Happy Pocket Full of Money.
Happy Pocket Full of Money. Okay. Okay. Writing that down. I'll link it up into the blog post once it goes live. But Allegra, it's been a tremendous, tremendous privilege, an honor, and a thrill to share this time with you. Because as I always say, you know, time is the one precious resource that we can't give back. You know, we don't make more of it. We can't get it back. So the fact that you would take this time with us in our audience, I can only say a very heartfelt thank you. It's a very, very cherished feeling. I'm full of knowledge. I'm full of insight. And I can only say thank you so much for this tremendous work that you do, because it is valuable. We're bringing that word back, but it's very valuable, not just to the women in your community, but the people they get to care for and, you know, bring more value to. So that's something I really want to say thank you for.
Well, right back at you, Ollie, because you are such an incredible host, so curious with your questions and so well studied. I'm honored that you follow what work I do and that you brought it to your listeners. So thank you.
If people want to get in touch with you, you know, just, you know, just follow up on, you know, Factor's mission. Is there a particular place we can direct them to?
Yeah, our website, factorawealth.com. Or our Instagram, factora_wealth.com, or we have a podcast called Coffee and Coin.
Coffee and Coin. Guys, go subscribe. Show some love. Final word. We do what I call the next step. It's like whether you mentioned a book, but you know, sometimes whether it's one thing that someone, if we can imagine someone listening to this, if they can wake up tomorrow with one thing, one action, one mantra, one affirmation, one book, one song lyric, whatever, they can use a next step tomorrow towards that next level. Is there anything we can leave them with?
I would put in their brain when they wake up tomorrow that they deserve financial abundance.
Simple as that. Simple as that. Wow. Guys, my guest, Allegra Moet Brantley, CEO and founder of Factor Wealth. Guys, go check out her work. Go follow her on LinkedIn. Follow her on Instagram. Follow her on all the web presences once this episode goes live. But guys, tremendous individual, as you can see. And we are so much more, you know, grateful for her existence in this one universe that we call this wonderful earth and life. Guys, as always, another episode of Waking Yawson in the can. Stay blessed. Stay safe. As always, do stay awesome. This has been another episode of the Awaken the Awesome podcast. We always love to get your feedback, so please do drop us a line via Instagram, Facebook, or email. Our email address, awakentheawesome@gmail.com. Do visit our official website at awakentheawesome.ca, where you can find our entire back catalog of episodes and incredible guests. Also, if you haven't already, please hop on over to Apple Podcasts and subscribe, give us a rating, and leave us a review, as this helps us tremendously in growing this podcast and spreading the word to more awesome listeners like you. We always appreciate your support, and thank you for listening. Stay awesome.